Have you ever felt like God slammed a door in your life and you didn't know why? In fact, it hurt at the time? I think we've all been there. And today you'll hear William Lane Craig's story of such a painful time, yet the amazing things to which it led. Welcome to Reasonable Faith with William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris, and we're continuing a series answering questions that we get at reasonablefaith.org. Someone asked today a very personal question of Dr. Craig. But before we begin, let me ask you a question. How would you like to start or take part in a Reasonable Faith chapter in your community? Reasonable Faith chapters are springing up all over the country and, in fact, the world. And they not only feature great discussion, special guest speakers, debates, new friendships, and learning with cutting-edge material, they're a lot of fun. Joining us again today is the director for Reasonable Faith chapters. And Dr. Craig, I'll ask you to introduce him.
Chris Shannon is here with us today in the studio. Chris is Dallas-based head of the local chapter in Dallas, and he's going to be the national director who will coordinate all of the chapters, both nationally and internationally. So it's great to have Chris in with us today.
Chris, how does one set up a Reasonable Faith chapter?
The best way to find out the process that you have to go through to start a chapter is to go to the Reasonable Faith website and click on the icon for chapters. And then the process is laid out on there. The first thing you need to do is fill out an application. And the second thing you need to do is provide us with a spiritual narrative detailing your walk, how you became a Christian, and how your walk is, and what your walk is like today with Christ. And the third thing you need to do is to go through the Reasonable Faith 3rd edition book and then fill out the Reasonable Faith study guide that goes along with it and then submit that to us.
All this information is at reasonablefaith.org.
That is correct.
I know that you have a real passion for these organizations to spring up across the nation and around the world. What is your passion here for seeing these happen?
Well, we want to see like-minded believers come together, and this will be a focal point for that, so that they can have dialogue regarding difficult issues about their faith and being able to defend their faith better. And we think that this is going to be really successful and be able to achieve that.
Tell us about the Dallas chapter. What are some of the things that you're doing, some activities, and how's the response been?
The Dallas chapter, the response for it has been excellent. We're seeing a lot of people that are very interested and excited about it. And we're going to be starting off Monday, November 2nd from 7 to 9 p.m. We're going to meet once a month starting out, and we're going to be bringing in some great speakers for our first few chapter meetings. And we're going to just bring Christians together to equip themselves better, to understand issues related to our faith, and to also be able to defend our faith and to reach out to non-believers.
Where's that first meeting going to be, Chris, and who's going to be speaking at it?
The first meeting is going to be at Park City's Baptist Church in the Ellis Parlor Room, and we'll be meeting there regularly. It's located at Dallas Parkway and Northwest Highway. And our first meeting, we're going to be flying in Greg Kokel, the founder and president of Stand to Reason Ministries, and he is going to be speaking on Is One Way the Only Way? So we'll be dealing with the issue of religious pluralism.
This is really a help to churches who often don't have apologetics resources, and this introduces them to Bill and kind of unites the churches as well, because people from all denominations and churches tend to gravitate toward this, don't they?
Absolutely. Through our research, we found that unfortunately few churches are engaging in apologetics. And so this is going to be a way for Christians to get exposure to this vital area of ministry. And we're reaching out to people all across the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. So this isn't just for one specific church, but it's for anyone who's interested with any denominational background all across the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. It's a tremendous opportunity to come and to listen to expert speakers and to become equipped so that people can go out into their spheres of influence and really make an impact, being more knowledgeable about their faith and more articulate about their faith, and to be able to reach out to non-believers and ask the questions that people are asking about Christianity today.
Chris Shannon, National Director for Reasonable Faith Chapters, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Let's continue then with some questions, Dr. Craig. We get lots of them at reasonablefaith.org, and we'd like to take some podcast time to answer some of these questions that we don't get a chance to answer online. And this is a good personal question. It says, "Hello, Dr. Craig. My wife and I have benefited tremendously from your speaking and writing ministry. We were wondering what led you and your family to move back to Europe after teaching at Westmont College."
Oh, this is a good personal question, as you say, Kevin, and I enjoy talking about these. I had been teaching seminary at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School for 7 years between 1980 and 1986 in the philosophy of religion department. But during my sabbaticals and during the summers, Jan and I would go back to Europe, where we had lived for many years while I was doing my graduate studies, to be involved in Christian ministry there. We had learned 2 European languages as well as English, and were equipped with 2 European doctorates to minister on university campuses in Europe that the normal missionary wouldn't be able to get as a venue. And so we were oddly and unusually equipped, I think, to minister in a European context, and were anxious to do so whenever we could. And while we were in Europe on sabbatical, the head of Greater Europe Mission and his wife met with us and said, "Bill and Jan, why don't you leave seminary teaching and come to Europe full-time and work with us in ministering on university campuses here?" Well, this really appealed to me, Kevin. It was where my heart lay, and I wanted to do it, but I knew what it meant. It meant I would have to quit teaching seminary and raise literally tens of thousands of dollars in support to move to Europe and maintain a family there. Jan and I had started our family while we were living in Deerfield. Charity and John had come along, and I just couldn't believe God for this. I thought I can't. I've got a family.
I can't get the money.
No, I can't quit teaching and try to raise tens of thousands of dollars every month to go to Europe. And I remember Elise Johnson, who was the wife of the head of Greater Europe Mission at that time, looked at me and said, "Bill, if the only reason you're staying at Trinity is financial, why, that's no reason at all." And that really cut me to the quick, Kevin, because it reminded me of the question that God had used so often in the past to guide Jan and me, namely, if money were no object, what would you really like to do? And the Lord had taken us to Birmingham, England. He had taken us to Germany to do doctorates there based upon that kind of radical faith, faith to believe God for his calling and for his provision, even though there were no material means of support. And I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to go to Europe and to minister in that way, but I just didn't have the faith to do so. Mm. Well, we went back to Trinity that fall after my sabbatical, only to discover that the dean of the seminary had decided to close the philosophy of religion department and terminate the MA in philosophy of religion degree at Trinity. He felt that this sort of program didn't really lie at the center of the calling of a seminary, and that even apologetics was no longer a useful discipline for the church. And so he proposed to shut down the philosophy of religion department and that way save 2 faculty salaries, Stuart Hackett's and mine. And so I suddenly found myself out of a job. And I felt as though God had just slammed the door shut in our face at Trinity, even as he had opened this door in Europe. And so I said to Jan, "That's it. We're going to Europe. This is the leading of God." And so what we did was the next year, we raised support for an entire year while I taught at Westmont College. On our weekends and whenever we could, we'd go out and do deputation in churches, interviewing with missions committees and so forth, presenting the vision. And in the space of that year, we raised the money to go to Europe and to be involved in campus ministry there. And it was so interesting how this finally happened. It was just, again, divine vindication. We were scheduled to leave for Europe in July of 87. The school year at Westmont had ended in May. I had exhausted all of my contacts for support raising, and we still needed about $300 more per month. And I didn't know where to turn. Kevin, I was reduced to calling churches in the Yellow Pages and asking them cold turkey if I could have an interview with their missions committee, which proved absolutely fruitless, as you can imagine. And I didn't know where we were going to get the remaining money we needed to go to Europe. And one day, in our house in Santa Barbara, we got a phone call, and it was someone from one of the churches at which we had interviewed in Ventura, California, who had declined to support us. And this person was calling and said, "We've changed our minds. Wow. We've decided we do want to support you after all." And I just smiled to myself and I said, "How much?" And he said, $300 a month.
How about that?
And I thought, praise you, Lord.
Yeah.
This is so much the way God has worked in our lives. As Jan has said, God is always almost late. And that has been the recurring pattern in our lives. So with that divine ratification of our calling, we moved in July of 87 from Westmont and Santa Barbara to Brussels, Belgium, where I took up a visiting researcher position at the University of Louvain in Belgium and began to do my work on divine foreknowledge and human freedom and God and time, and then to speak on university campuses all around Western and Eastern Europe as well. And so that was the story of how the Lord took us out of full-time seminary teaching into the ministry that we in fact have today. And if I might just add, I think there's a profound lesson in all of this, Kevin. I would never have moved out of my comfort zone on my own. We were comfortable at Trinity. If they hadn't closed the department, I would have accepted tenure and gone on teaching there. It was only by being kicked out of the little evangelical pond that we were catapulted into this broader world of scholarship and ministry that we have enjoyed since then and that we continue today through reasonable faith.
And yet
it started because of a seeming disaster.
Yeah, because it hurts when it happens. You're thinking, God, why me?
Oh, it was very difficult, Kevin. I don't know how my wife and I would have made it through those trying times if it hadn't been for Stu Hackett and his wife, Joan. They were just such a comfort to us as we had lost our job and were just sort of thrown out. And we felt, of course, rejected by the seminary, and we had been there 7 years. And
certainly
just
disappointed they would do something so lacking in foresight by saying, you know, we don't need to have a philosophy.
Well, that's a whole different issue that I don't want to get into. I think it was short-sighted and a mistake. But from our point of view, it was the left hand of God's providence, so to speak, taking us through difficult waters, slamming a door in our face and opening another door that I would not have gone through had not this first door been closed. So as I look back, I can thank God for his direction in our lives, even though it was through one of the most difficult times we've been through as a couple.
One more thing here. I see what you did as well. You were depending on and believing God for his support and for his provision. Yet you were also doing something very depressing. You were going through the yellow pages and trying to raise support. I mean, you do what my grandfather always said, putting feet to your faith. In other words, you weren't sitting on the sofa saying, God will provide, God will provide, God will provide. There's also an element of work that was going on there.
Absolutely. It's not passivity. That's not what trusting the Lord means. It means that you trust God to guide you as you step out actively to try to accomplish the goals that he's called you to. And so that was the way in which he provided for us as we aggressively stepped out.
Here's another question. In fact, two questions. Dear Dr. Craig, what do you think the best resource is for one who is interested in how can I know Christianity is true? Now, let me go and answer that. That would be your book, Reasonable Faith, the third edition.
Well, I'm prejudiced. I think that it is a good place to answer that question. But I would say it's not for the beginner. It's an intermediate level book. I wrote that initially as a seminary textbook. And so I don't recommend Reasonable Faith to beginners. I would say that if someone is just getting started, I would say look at Paul Little's book, Know Why You Believe, or Lee Strobel's books, Case for Creator and Case for Christ. These are intro-level books for the beginner, and yet they're substantive books, too. Yeah. They're good books. They've got good quality material in them, but that would be a good place for the beginner to start. And then he can graduate to an intermediate-level book like Reasonable Faith.
The second question is, also, how do you do your quiet times? Now, I want to give some insight on why I think so many of us ask this question. I've asked you this question. Other people have asked you this question. How do you do your devotions, Bill? I think that, well, first of all, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to do what we know is expected of us, and that is to be spending time with the Lord and in our quiet times, our QT. And also we get a lot of pressure from our church leadership and everything to have that quiet time. So people want to know, well, okay, well, how do you do it? How should I do it?
Well, I try to make it a regularly scheduled part of my day that I begin the day with. I find if I don't do it first, it just gets squeezed out later on. So I typically will have my devotional time from 5:30 in the morning until 6:30. I get up, and for an hour, I will first have a time of prayer in which I will pray for myself, and then for Jan, and our children, and then for various needs that we're aware of, and for projects or ministry speaking engagements that are upcoming and so forth. Then after that time of prayer, I'll read a page from the Church Fathers. Over the last several years, I have been reading the Ante-Nicene Church Fathers. I was challenged to do this by reading a sermon by John Wesley, an address to the clergy that he gave, where he said that all ministers of the gospel need to have been familiar with the writings of the Church Fathers. And I thought, well, I need to do this. So I got this massive multi-volume series called the Ante-Nicene, Nicene, and Post-Nicene Fathers. That is to say, these are the Church Fathers that wrote before, during, and after the Council of Nicaea. And all I do is read two pages a day. It's not an extraordinary amount, but I've just worked through these huge volumes, two pages a day, and I've completed now something like 10 volumes. I've done all of the Ante-Nicene Fathers now, and I'm on the volume on the Nicene Fathers. I've just started Eusebius's Church History.
Wow.
Just two pages a day. This is another lesson. Jan and I call this the turtle method, after the famous fable of the tortoise and the hare, where, remember, the tortoise just plods along little by little, slowly and steadily, and in the end, it's the tortoise who wins the race rather than the hare who goes in fits and starts. And so this turtle method of working, as we call it, is what I'm using in reading the Church Fathers, just two pages per day. And so I do that after my prayer time, and then I open the New Testament, and I read a paragraph from the New Testament. I'm currently doing it in Greek to keep up the Greek, read a paragraph from the New Testament, and then I'll read a commentary on that passage. And I would recommend for someone who wants to start, take, say, the Gospel of Mark and the commentary on the Gospel of Mark that is written by William Lane, a very similar name to my own, a man with whom I have been confused. But William Lane was a wonderful New Testament scholar who wrote a commentary on the Gospel of Mark. And it's a wonderful experience to read just a paragraph from Mark and then to read Lane's commentary on that paragraph. And so I'll read the scripture and a commentary. And then the final thing that I'll do is to read a page from Operation World about a certain country for that calendar day. Operation World is a missions handbook which has for each calendar day a different country of the world in which the demographics of that country are described, its political system, its economy, and then the state of the church in that country and the needs for that country spiritually. And I'll pray for the needs of the country of that day. And that helps one to have a world consciousness of what God is doing throughout the entire globe. And that will take me very easily an hour of time to do all of that. And so that's what I try to do each weekday.
Reading the early church fathers been rewarding to you? The average person maybe who doesn't have a lot of college or education, are they going to get a lot of, out of it, some insights?
Maybe
there?
Not as much. I think it really helps if you've had theology courses.
Okay.
So that when you come to, say, Tertullian and you read his essay Ad Praxius or Against Praxius, you really begin to see, here are the first glimmerings of the doctrine of the two natures of Christ, that Christ is truly man and truly God, and how this eventually would come to be enshrined in the Council of Chalcedon. So it does really help to have had, I think, some theological background so that you appreciate what you're reading.
But we really ought to know what they were teaching early in church history. I mean, all of us.
Oh, I think it's very helpful to read these early authors and to understand the development of doctrine. It's part of understanding the history of doctrine. And it can be very, very rewarding reading people like Tertullian, Athanasius, Origen, and so forth.
Thank you so much for listening to Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig, and we'll pick it up there next time and answer some more questions that we receive at reasonablefaith.org. One more time, if you would like to start a Reasonable Faith chapter in your area, information is at reasonablefaith.org. And by the way, if you appreciate the information that you get at reasonablefaith.org and you would like to see these podcasts continue and see us branch out even further, then be a partner with us. You can find out how when you go to reasonablefaith.org. Your financial and prayer support means a great deal to us. That's reasonablefaith.org, and we'll see you next time on Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig.